the Gaudi in his early 20s that has a wee flat above a butcher's shop in Barcelona with his medical student brother, and he's living the high life. And then all of a sudden, that's taken away from him as well, because his brother dies at the age of 25. And then 2 months later, his mum dies of a broken heart.
Faith at the Fringe, a Sanctuary First podcast series. Uncovering God in the creative arts. At the biggest international arts festival in the world, Sanctuary First stops to ask, where does faith and art meet?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Faith at the Fringe podcast for 2024. I do believe this is episode 8. We are flying through the Edinburgh Festival Fringe at the moment and really enjoying the conversations that we're having with various different performers who are here at the Fringe with their shows, lots of different variety of types of shows. And we're hearing about them and about their heart for it all and about that question, is there a place for faith at the Fringe? And so far what we're hearing is absolutely, and in one sense actually the Fringe needs faith to have its place, to be the fullest Fringe that it can be, and I'm loving hearing that. I hope you are as well. With us today for this episode number 8, I have two friends. You may well recognize both of them. I know you're going to recognize Heather for those that are watching. So Heather Thorpe, Hello. You're with us. Hiya, glad to have you back.
Yes, great to be here.
And if you don't know who Heather is the planting and pioneering coordinator for Glasgow Presbytery, but she is also a good friend here at Sanctuary First. And with us today, Heather, we have Stephen Callahan. Great to have you with us, Stephen.
Pleasure.
And Stephen is the creative director for AGAP. That correct?
That's correct, yeah.
All right, so I'm not great with acronyms. So what is AGAP? What does that stand for?
AGAP is the acronym for the Archdiocese of Glasgow Arts Project, which is a bit of a mouthful, but essentially we are a branch of the Catholic Church in Glasgow that reaches out to people of all faiths and none through the creative arts.
Perfect. That sounds brilliant. And then brilliant because of what you're doing and how relevant it is for our podcast today. And you have... Actually, I was going to say, you have a show this year, which we're going to talk about, but you were also here last year with us and we had such warm kind of feedback. We really, really wanted to have you back with us to talk with us again about your show. So last year it was all oggy, 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 oi, oi, oi. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. It was a modern retelling of the Confessions of St. Augustine. And this year we're here with something very different, which is the life of Antoni Gaudí. So it's not a one-man show this year. Last year I was on my own. This time we've got three performers, one of which is myself. But it's great. I've been coming to the Fringe now since 2016 with different productions. And every year it's been something totally different.
Amazing. So last year you weaved in some faith thinkings around St. Augustine. And actually what you were saying earlier was that actually you came on dressed up in character, not as we might expect.
No, it was an Augustine that would speak to today. It was Augustine played as the Glasgow Ned, who then becomes the educated public speaker, and the play told the story up to his conversion to Christianity. It didn't take it any further than that. And I think that that's kind of the thread that we're following again with Gaudí. Because last year we've got somebody who's, you know, a great theologian, who is, respected by all different Christian denominations for his contribution to the teachings of the church. And is already a canonized saint in the Catholic Church. This year, we've got someone who is being considered for canonization by the Catholic Church, but he's not a saint. And he's someone who has attracted attention, not for his theology as such, but for his creativity as an artist. He's a world famous architect who's he's Marmite to people. He's loved and he's reviled by people for his style, but also was a man of faith and a man of frailty. And I have always enjoyed exploring the lives of the saints with a big S and with a small S, as flesh and blood human beings who journeyed with God.
Wow, there's so much there I'm already wanting to unpack with you. But before we go any further, let's have a look. We've got you said Gaudí. That's really interesting. I would have always said Gaudí.
I think I've been pronouncing it wrong all my life as well.
So thank you for educating us. What's your takeaway today? Oh, well, the name isn't actually Gaudí, it's Gaudí. So we've got Gaudí, God's architect. Just all about how he expressed his faith and obviously the visions that God gave him and how he was able to put them into these incredible buildings. So that is on at the C Venue. You want to say a little bit more about how people can get there?
Yeah, it's in C Venue's Aurora Studio, which is the small studio space in C Venue's Aurora, which is Venue 6 at the Fringe. It's the halls, Lauriston Halls, in Lauriston Place, just beside the Church of the Sacred Heart, the Jesuit Church in Lauriston, and the performances are at 6:40 in the evening. Some of the performances, particularly the weekday ones, are looking reasonably busy just now, so I would encourage people to book in advance if they're hoping to get along and see it.
Fantastic, thank you. Right, so that is Gaudí, God's architect. And if I say it often enough, I know it will drop in. That will be great. But you also mentioned there that Gaudí is being considered for being canonized. Yes, canonized as a saint. Is that currently what's happening?
Yes. As with all of the plays that I have written over the years, I tend to look for a nudge from the Holy Spirit as to what it is I'm meant to be doing, you know, because I have various ideas about, I'd like to write about this, I'd like to write about that. Oh, that's an interesting story, or that's an interesting person. And I had listened to an audiobook about Gaudí a while ago, and I had visited the Sagrada Familia in the past, and I enjoy Spain. I have always enjoyed Spanish culture. And I listened to this biography because having a young family, a lot of the books that I consume by audiobooks just now, because getting down to sit down with a book and read it, it can be quite difficult at times. So I consume books on the move. And I listened to this audiobook and I thought, gosh, that's a great story, you know. From not just a faith angle, but it's an interesting drama. It's a tale of unrequited love. It's a tale of triumph over ill health and adversity. It's a tale of someone who's quirky and eccentric and not always displaying the best of grace in his dealings with other people, but who is very much aware of his own frailties. And I thought, gosh, that would be a great character to bring to the stage. There's already so much drama there. Yeah. And this rattled about in my head for a while. And round about Christmas time, I was journeying on the train. And I checked social media on my phone. And noticed something about Gaudí, the 100th anniversary of his death, approaching. Mm-hmm. With the possibility of the completion of at least a phase, I don't know if it's the completion of the whole thing, of this Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, his magnum opus, his great church that he was building when he died. But the possibility of that being completed in time for the centenary of his death, which will be in 2026. And the movement to have him canonized, which has been going on for a while, people have been asking for Gaudí to be what they call raised to the altar so that people can seek his intercession for a while. But it seems that the case has been accepted for consideration now by the Vatican, and it's a long process, and it involves a lot of scrutiny. So the play doesn't take the approach that he is a saint. In fact, the play at the outset asks, in quite a quirky and irreverent way, who was Antoni Gaudí, the genius, the madman, or the saint? Or is he all three? And can you be all three? Which fascinates me because I think God does great things with mad people. Otherwise, you know, I wouldn't be still working in the church. I think the saints are people who have ridden the storm, who have experienced the highs and the lows, and who have journeyed with God. And I thought when I read this, I thought, gosh, if that's not a kick in the backside from the Holy Spirit to move me towards this, okay, I'll go with Gaudí, and rightly or wrongly, punted out a social media post that said, we are doing a production about Gaudí.
Yeah.
And then I was committed, and that was it.
Yeah. So I'm really fascinated to know, who are the other two characters that you've chosen to put in this, and why did you choose them?
Well, you'll be interested to know that although there are three actors in the play, there are 19 characters. so we are all
multitasking,
multiple characters, as with many shows at the Fringe. It's also a practical move. But I think with theatre, as opposed to with film, where, you know, there's the capability to do so many different things, with theatre, I think people go to see theatre to say, not how did they do that, but wow, that was cool the way they did that. You know, so I want people to come and see it and go, oh, that was interesting that they became all those different characters just by changing one prop that denotes when it's his mother, his brother, his father, the love of his life, various other characters that pass through his life. So, yeah, we're multitasking, and hopefully we tell a story that's going to make people think, and will make people think about their own lives. That's really what the play's got, the double purpose, I suppose, of, you know, provoking people to think about what is a saint, and if he could be a saint, this man who was reputedly, according to some, a right grumpy curmudgeon, you know, with an artistic flair, who was a daily penitent at confession, who walked every day from the church that he was working on to go to confession and mass every evening to confess about his bad temper, but he tried, you know. If he can be a saint, well, maybe I can be a saint.
Yeah.
And that's what we want people to come away with, is this idea of, this is accessible. This is not something up, you know, pie in the sky.
Yeah. So are there other aspects to the production that you think will help it to be accessible to the audience? Are there, because theatre in itself is a medium that's, we've talked about being quite immersive.
Yeah, I think so far we've had four preview shows in Glasgow, and I think people have been surprised by it. There's not many people out there who really know very much about Gaudí and his life, and they're familiar with the buildings. They've maybe visited the Sagrada Familia. Some people during post-show conversations have, you know, opened up about how they were profoundly touched by a visit to the Sagrada Familia, even just with the interplay of light in the building, you know. And it's been a chance for a dialogue. But also people have said, you know, I learned a lot from that. I think it's got a kind of quasi educational purpose. And I also hope that because he's an interesting figure for people who are also not people of faith, that it might be a way to a discussion, a way to an interaction. And I'm, you know, aware that over the years, theatre's got the potential to invite people in, to be part of a dialogue,
yeah.
You know, and you know, when we were considering that opening scene with the genius, the madman, the saint, you know, and the actor who's doing the saint bit saying, you know, is it not a bit irreverent that I'm doing this? And I says, but that's what people think of when they think of saints. And we have to, in a sense, take the mickey and do it ourselves. Because if people, you know, you're kind of up against it if you're a faith-based theatre maker. And I'm a member of the Scottish Society of Playwrights, and I've been producing theatre for 20 years. But I think it's the last taboo in Scottish theatre to be a Christian theatre maker. And I think even more of a taboo is to be a Catholic theatre maker who is a practicing Catholic. It's okay if you're a bit controversial, you know. I'm a Catholic, but I don't believe in that. You know, I'm all right with abortion, or I'm okay with, you know, I don't really believe in the Pope, or what, you know. But to be a Catholic theatre maker who does practice his faith doesn't make me perfect. I'm a sinner. I sin every day, but a bit like Gaudí. But to actually be out there making plays about this topic, and not in a way that tries to hide that, I think is possibly the last taboo. It's the most controversial thing you can be.
It's really interesting what you're saying about that being the last taboo, and also what you were saying about, you know, having your hands in that prayer position, depicting a saint as, you know, as if the halo is hovering over the head type thing. But it sounds like you're exposing caricatures and stereotypes that may well be held about people of faith, and actually saying you might hold this, that you think that this is what it's like, but it's not. Here's the reality. And in that sense, taking Gaudí and his creations, his architecture, and humanizing them in a way that you makes it relevant. You know, when we think about faith at the fringe as well, it's recognizing that at some point faith is probably and possibly not at the center of the fringe. It is on the fringes of the fringe in that respect. And certainly sometimes when we think about Christianity, what Jesus has kind of set out was actually that the church was kind of on the fringes, and that's what he was looking to bring people in and into the church and everything as well. And it takes quite a lot of boldness and courage, doesn't it, to open up that conversation to say, We haven't got it all right. You know, it is a case of walking in humility. We haven't got it all correct, but we're not scared of the conversations. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me as though, in part, with Gaudí, what you're doing is saying, we're not scared to have these conversations. We're not scared to talk about genius, madman, saint. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it because it's all humanity. Mm-hmm. And you touched on as well a little bit about the themes that you saw, you heard when you were listening to that audiobook. You were talking about the themes in Gaudí's life that you sounds like you've put, you mentioned unrequited love, and you mentioned, you know, faith and other things as well. And I'm just wondering, from those themes that you picked up in that audiobook, what did you then pull into the play that's coupled up with this passion that you have to open that honest dialogue about faith?
I think that one of the hot topics just now for people in their understanding of the human person is mental health. Mm. And I realised that Gaudí was a man who, at the age of 42, which was the age that I was when I was writing the play, I've just turned 43, but I thought, at my age, he took to his bed in an extreme Lenten fast and basically turned his face to the wall.
Ah, wow.
And was unable to be talked out of this by even his elderly father, who had journeyed with him for his whole life. Now, we've got a case here of a man who's been through a lot. By the time he was six, he was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. He spent his boyhood among the natural world, which is why we've got so many natural motifs of animals and God's creation. Similarly, he was an eco-warrior before there ever was such a thing as an eco-warrior. He was recycling materials. He started off as a teenager building with bits of ruins of an old Cistercian monastery in Poblet with his friends and coming up with this manifesto, this crazy manifesto with two teenage friends for the rebuilding of the monastery and its economy and building up tourism to fuel it. And there would be a pharmacy and a flour mill and a sawmill, and we'll generate staff and we'll have, you know, visitors who will be brought here by transport, and we'll distill brandy because his father was a coppersmith. But a wee boy who, first of all, couldn't really attend school unless he was brought there by a donkey and a cart because he couldn't walk. You know, so he battles all this. He nearly died at birth. His mum, Antonia, lost two children before she had him, and the doctor basically said, you should prepare yourselves to lose another child. He went to study in Barcelona to complete his education and eventually went to the New School of Architecture. But his brother was a medical student. And so the Gaudi in his early 20s that has a wee flat above a butcher's shop in Barcelona with his medical student brother, and he's living the high life. And then all of a sudden that's taken away from him as well, because his brother dies at the age of 25. And then 2 months later, his mum dies of a broken heart. So he is left from the age of 27 to look after his dad. And his sister marries a musician who's an alcoholic and leaves her penniless with a daughter to support. And she dies, and he's left with the care of his niece and his dad from the time that he is 27.
My goodness, that's a lot of tragedy in life, isn't it?
A lot of tragedy. Mm-hmm. So by the time he gets to 42 and he's plucked up the courage to propose to the woman that he really wants to, you know, he's thinking, maybe she's put in my path for a reason. And he proposes to this woman. And she says, I'm already engaged to be married to somebody else. So no wonder life caves in for him. And his dad sends for a well-known spiritual writer who is actually, I think, he is one step away from being a canonized saint. I think he's blessed. The title is blessed. It's different stages. But Blessed Father Torres Ibáñez, and he's a well-known spiritual writer. But the dad, Gaudi's dad, sends for him to talk Gaudi out of this Lenten fast. And he does. And he basically says, you know, we don't know what the conversation was, but in the play, you have work to do. You don't get to decide when you down tools. God's given you a task, which in my mind harkens back to St. John Henry Newman, who wrote this wonderful prayer out of the depths of depression about how God has assigned me a certain task that he has given to no one else. And I think that that's what I want my play to do, is to ask the question of every person, what's my vocation? Why am I alive today? Even if I am in the depths of despair, even if I have struggled for years with sin, or even if I have struggled for years with mental ill health or physical ill health, perhaps I am in chronic pain, perhaps I am in a state of disturbance. What is my purpose? What am I being called to do with these 24 hours? Because the part of the story of Gaudi that everybody knows, and I might have given away a lot in that, but hey-ho, as my wife would say, hey-ho, Billy Joe, whatever. I want people to know that even if they can't get to see the play, this is a story to engage with. Because 73 years old, on his way to Mass and confession, he's hit by a tram. And they think he's a tramp. And nobody wants to help him. and he's lying at the side of the road, the famous architect, with clothes held together by safety pins, stinking because he'd let his personal hygiene go to live like a hermit in the Sagrada Familia where he worked, with this profound faith, who ploughed all his money into caring for his workers and their children, who was reviled by contemporaries like Picasso, who belonged to the anarchist left-wing side of Spanish politics. And this man just seemed to just take it all. But he was feisty as well. You know, he was feisty. He was argumentative. He was fiery. He was a real wild card. And then one day, bang, he's hit by a tram at a busy junction in the centre of Barcelona. Now, at the time of writing this, my dad was on his deathbed. And I lost my dad in January of this year. It was a happy death, as we would say. You know, it was a happy death in the sense that my dad believed in the Lord. Mm-hmm. He believed that he was going to a better place with God's mercy. He never took heaven for granted. He always said, "If I get to heaven." And he died with Mass on the television on a Sunday morning. And my mother wet his lips with Lord's water and turned round, and he had passed. So I take great courage and consolation from that. But the reason I bring that up is that death is a wake-up call for all of us. It's a reminder of our own mortality. And anyone who's lost someone close will know that that's the point at which your faith is tested and where you are asked to put your money where your mouth is. Mm. So I'd written about three scenes of Gaudí, and then my dad died, and then I went back to it, and I thought, so what does God want me to say through this play, if anything? Well, it's that there's a tram car headed for all of us. And we don't know what it is. It could be an illness. It could be a tragedy. It could be something that turns your life around, knocks you to the ground, and you don't see it coming. What do you do with that? And what are you going to do with your time now? Because my old spiritual director used to say to me, "Stephen, you have 24 hours to live. Do the best you can with that. And if God wills it, you'll get another one at the end of that. But what are you going to do with that 24 hours you've got now?" So that's what it may sound terribly morbid, but Gaudí should inspire people to live a life that's full, a life that's full of colour and vitality, a life that isn't perfect, but it doesn't need to be. And I think in today's culture, where, you know, we constantly talk about the value of human life, and there's the discussion going on politically just now about end of life assistance, you know, the idea that God has a purpose for every life is very relevant. And I know it's a topic that divides people, but having walked with my dad and helped with caring for him through his final illness, I think a lot of people misunderstand what those final stages are for. And I believe that those final stages of my dad's suffering were not about getting him to heaven. They were about helping me to draw closer to God and please God, helping me to get to heaven. So what I'm trying to say is that I think that there are themes in this play that are incredibly relevant: mental health, despair, and what do we do with it? And those that surround a person who are suffering and a person who is in despair, what do we do to encourage them to pick up their cross and walk with the Lord, who draws close to us in our suffering and through our suffering? rather than saying, "Ah, you've had enough. That's a shame. You know, we'll just ease your passing." So that's, I think that all of those things, as well as all the other stuff that's topical, like the, you know, the care for the environment, and we are stewards of God's creation, and we should have a respect for nature and good use of resources, etc., etc. They're all in there, and they're all important. They are. But I'm just saying that those are the themes that were very much in my heart when I was writing this.
Thank you so much for being so honest, as you've talked about those themes that have touched your heart with it. And it sounds as though the writing, the play that you've written in Gaudí, is you've invested not just head knowledge, but this is heart experience that's gone into it. You know, and you're so right when we're talking about loss and losing loved ones, you know, and having coming at that from a faith perspective, or being a person of faith, you still lose people that you love. You know, we do. You know, my dad passed away about 2.5 years ago or so. And at that time, I was so aware of just being held so gently in really strong hands of God, so that I was times of weakness and just being an absolute wreck, God was there going, "It's okay, Ruth, I've got you." And not kind of being glib with that or anything, actually just being direct and comforting and clear. And then, you know, as well as having friends that came and gave practical help, and family that gave practical help, to the point then, you know, I was able to give practical help and share that out as well. And that's part of it as well, as because it's a, when you're grieving and mourning, it's a collective experience, in the sense that we all go through it. We all have that to encounter, to kind of work our way through and to find out how do we heal within it. And it's not a case of moving on. I don't think it's that. Actually, I think it's a case of we then learn what life is like different. It's then changed. And it sounds like, you know, I asked about that honest conversation that you open up. And it sounds like in Gaudí, you're opening up these honest conversations in exactly the same way you've done with us just now. And that's why I'm so thankful that you have opened up these honest conversations that we can have in and around what we might have thought was going to be a podcast about Gaudí and his architecture. But here we are, we're talking about real life matters that really touch our hearts and affect us, our families and our communities. Because that's really one of the key things with culture, isn't it? Is that it does bring in every element of life. And what I think is really admirable with what you're doing is that you are saying actually faith is right here in all the gritty parts of life and all the dirty parts of life. Faith and God is right here.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering if I could ask if you've seen that through other art forms that you've worked with in your role, that there's another connection or other connections between creativity and mission and conversations that are opened up.
Absolutely. I've been running AGAP for 18 years this year. And over that time, I've been privileged to work with people from all different artistic disciplines and people of all different ages and abilities, as well as people of faith, and people who are not affiliated with any particular religious background. And I've always marveled at the way that the arts and creativity are a bridge to what we would call God. And it's there in music, it's there in drama, it's there in the visual arts, dance, writing, literary arts. And it's been my privilege to meet people who are, you know, professionals in those fields. And sometimes, you know, like I can remember we had a discussion event where we screened a film and we talked about, you know, about faith and film. And the writer of the movie, he said, "So we're here to celebrate faith." And I said, "Well, yes, but if you can't celebrate that, then let's celebrate film." And that was the starting point, because I love cinema. I love film, you know, so, and I love theatre. So let that be the thing that sparks the discussion. And it's not always things that are overtly religious that spark that discussion. I do think, however, today, perhaps more than ever, there is a need for things that are unashamedly dealing with faith. And that's what I do in many cases. And I know I've said that Gaudí traverses both the sacred and the secular, so I hope it attracts a broad audience. But the reality is we need people to tackle the big faith themes, and there are musicians out there who are doing that. There are filmmakers out there who are doing that, and they raise eyebrows and they attract, you know, controversial responses sometimes. But that's what the arts are there to do. And I think I've always said that if the dictionary definition, if you like, of art is about exploring what it means to be human, because we often think about the arts and humanities in an academic sense. If the arts are about exploring what it means to be human, then for us as Christians, that definition of what it is to be human has been changed by a historical event, the birth of Jesus Christ, and his life, his death, and his resurrection. Why are we still talking about Jesus after all this time? There were loads of people who claimed to be the Messiah. There were loads of people who died on crosses, who were crucified by the Romans. But why do we remember this one? And why do we still talk about it? And people say, well, because of his miracles, because of his wise teachings. No. It's because he's the only person in the entire history of the human race that rose from the dead. And we're still talking about that. But we have brushed it off as a myth. We've relegated it alongside myths of other ancient cultures and said, you know, well, that's nice. We'll put that in there. But we better mention, you know, some other world religions in the same breath as we mention Christianity, because we never know who we're going to offend. I think we've reached a stage now, I hope, of maturity where these Christian ideas can stand alone, and that bridge that we're throwing out can come in different ways and at different levels. And sometimes it has to be about Jesus, about a saint, and sometimes it has to just be about something that provokes consideration of beauty. Because the church's teaching on the arts is often referred to as the via pulchritudinis, the way of beauty. And that can sound airy-fairy and it can scare people off, because they then think, oh, you know, these Christians, and particularly the Catholics with their catechism definition of the arts and how it's aligned with truth, beauty, and goodness. If it's the way of beauty, oh, it must be all rainbows and kittens. It's not. It engages with the darkness and the light, and it is allied with truth. Didn't Jesus say, I am the way, the truth, and the life? So the fact is that art is beautiful in that it engages with the truth. Truth, beauty, and goodness. And goodness also means dealing with the darkness as well. So, you know, we all like to be entertained and we all like to find lightness. I do too. And there's certainly some relief in Gaudí and some funny bits and stuff. But the fact is that the arts have that capacity to convey something beautiful in the midst of an otherwise quite disturbing time, perhaps, in our culture, and a time perhaps where people are wondering, where are we going as a faith community? Why are the churches not packed like they used to be, you know, for worship? And some of them are, let's face it, some of them are. But the fact is that there are those who would despair and say, where are we going? But I often think of St. John the 23rd, Pope John the 23rd, who famously said, well, God, it's your church and I'm going to bed. You know, because it is, in a sense, God's church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So we as artists, we're not there to save the church. We're not there to save our faith. We're simply there to initiate that dialogue that you spoke about, to hold out that hand of friendship and say, if you're interested, here's a wee bit about what we believe. Because as I often say to the kids in the schools when I visit the schools, okay, well, you might not believe in God, you might not believe in Christ, but one way or another, you are all, same as I, going to die one day, and you're going to find out. I am too. And right now, I believe that, yes, there is a God. I believe, as Anthony Gowdy did, that we do go somewhere, that this is not the be-all and end-all. But I do believe that this has its purpose, and what we do with this really counts. And for some people who can't quite reach out to those deeper truths, those bigger questions in life, who haven't maybe had the spiritual maturity to ask the really difficult questions, but who are thinking, oh my goodness, I can't ask that. Well, they're churchy people. Oh, they'd be shocked by that. Read the lives of the saints, for goodness sake.
Or you come know. See Gaudi, because yeah. It's all in there. Absolutely. As well. I love that idea about the hand of friendship going out to start that dialogue. It's, in that sense, it's just accepting, isn't it? It's saying, I accept you, I'm putting my hand out. And I think that's a really strong message that comes from the church and faith community and faith people, is saying, my hand's out to you, my hand is out to whoever my neighbour is, and I'm here to walk that with you. And I also love that you've picked up about that purpose, that, you know, God has a good purpose for each and every one of us, and that we get to enjoy flourishing in that purpose as well. And it may well be part of that purpose between the 19th and the 25th of August is to come and see Gaudi. It sounds like there is, you know, in Gaudi's, some of his buildings, that there's the light and the dark, and it sounds as though you've got that involved in it, and in with humour and with sensitivity and just that challenge and space to think as well. It sounds as though there's this lovely balance. But we are coming to the end of this lovely conversation. And so, Heather, you know, it's just been so rich and deep, hasn't it? Really good. Have you any kind of key takeaway that you're going to pack in a bag and take with you from today?
I think just that we're all human, we're all imperfect, but God still has plans for us, and that we can just take that next step each day with him.
Yeah, yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? And I'm really encouraged that you are having these open, honest conversations, and unashamedly having these conversations and just saying, do you know what? My life is with Jesus, and I'm still going to have this conversation, and that's an important place to be. So I think that's a great encouragement for us, and for folks that are sitting with a faith in Jesus. And actually, it's also for our listeners that don't have a faith in Jesus. You know, it's that encouragement of going, well, we're here, and we want to have those conversations that you might think are too hard to have, but they are not too hard to have at all. All throughout history, people have had those conversations with their friends and indeed with God. And so let's keep talking. Stephen, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I really appreciate it. And all the best, every blessing on your own work.
Thank you, and to you and yours as well. I know it's going to be a super show. And Heather, thank you for joining us again.
You're very welcome. I've loved it. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you to you for coming on our Faith at Fringe podcast for 2024, episode 8. I hope you have been inspired and provoked and challenged and reflected and everything in between, and encouraged to come see Gaudi with Stephen's play. So thank you, everybody, and look forward to seeing you next time.